Welcome to XX Science. It's in your genes. Today is Saturday, April 27th, 2013. I am Adrian Rorick, chemistry editor, and with me today is Jeannie Garbarino, biology editor at XX Science. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Adrian.
Is there anything that's been catching your interest in the media lately?
But yeah, I would say that I kind of was following about a few weeks ago the Dove released a new campaign where they basically brought in women and a forensic sketch artist, and they had a woman sit behind a curtain and describe what she thinks she looks like. And then they had a second person come in and describe what they thought the woman looked like who just described herself. And so they created two images, and then they had people compare the two images to one another, how you perceive yourself and how others perceive you. It made quite an impact on the community, and I definitely saw two types of responses. The first response being embracing the message that you are more beautiful than you think, and that's the tagline that they used. And then other people saying, you know, hold on, this video really wasn't as good. This social experiment was not good, and I thought that they really missed the mark. And so it was kind of interesting to listen to those two types of perspectives. Did you get to see it, Adrian?
Well, I have to admit, though, I hadn't seen it played on air, but I did catch a little bit of the postings of it on Facebook and social media, as one does, and I did get a chance to see it. It's a 3-minute commercial. The video is called Dove Real Beauty Sketches, in case anybody is like me and is not always up on their commercials. I haven't really had a chance to take a good critique of it, and I think that might be interesting to look around and see what kind of critiques there are, because I can see that there would be two sides to this, right? Dove's expression is that your own self-perception is different than that of other people's perceptions of you, right? And that you do have beauty that you perhaps just don't see.
Right, and I think it definitely speaks to a general sort of lack of confidence maybe that some might have in themselves, and the intent to kind of showcase the fact that women just put themselves down a little bit too much is there. But for instance, there's a Tumblr called Little Drops, and they basically wrote this critique, why Dove's Real Beauty Sketches video makes me uncomfortable and kind of makes me angry. And so some of the reasons that she listed in this involved the idea that women of color were on screen for less than 10 seconds. So out of over six minutes of footage, women of color were on the screen for less than 10 seconds. That's absolutely a valid argument. Mm-hmm. And that some of the terminology used to describe the imagery was implied as negatives, like having a rounder face or freckles or fatter or, you know, something like that. I get the critiques, but I also get how this might be a useful thing.
Yeah, I do think another valid critique is that there is an absence of anybody with a higher body mass.
Yeah.
These are all real slim women. And what if you have a higher body mass? Does that imply that you are not more beautiful than you think? So I do see that this is not...
Yeah, it's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
Yeah. But, yeah, it blew up the Facebook streams. Let me tell you, I was seeing it everywhere. Every woman that I knew on Facebook was sharing this video. And I just thought that... And it wasn't because they were necessarily loving it or hating. You know, it... So I saw, that's what I mean. I saw both sides. I saw people who absolutely despised it, and I saw people who absolutely loved it. I saw both sides of the coin. I think that Dove could probably do better in the future, but the whole idea that this actually needs to be addressed is something that's just plain old sad, and I'm glad that someone's starting the conversation.
I agree. This week, we had 6 posts.
So speaking of Facebook, I was thinking about some of the stuff that's been on the site past week. Tara Haley, our health editor, wrote a 2-part series on vaccinations. She wrote her first series based on how social networks influence our decisions to vaccinate. And then she followed that up with how fear might influence our decision to vaccinate. So in her first post, she talked about the power of social media and how social media can influence very much health decisions, including vaccinations. A lot of parents are going to Facebook to get some opinion from other people about whether or not they should vaccinate. These people that are answering these kinds of queries are not necessarily versed in the vaccination science or any science for that matter. And it's kind of interesting to see how people would be so remarkably open to listening to some random Joe Schmo on their Facebook stream, but not perhaps like some CDC literature or someone who knows what they're talking about. And so then, Tara followed it up and talked about how fear might not be the best way to approach getting people to change their minds and how fear might play a role in vaccination. So if you're going to talk about if you don't vaccinate your child will die. That type of tactic can actually backfire and cause people to do the exact opposite of what you're trying to do. But how do you really consider how to present vaccinations and get the more positive spin, especially when the whole basis of vaccination is for you to protect your child against a deadly disease? So it's like inherently there, the fear, whether you're spinning it in a positive light or a negative light. It's an interesting question, and I'm not sure there's an answer right now.
Definitely. There's a fear factor in vaccination decisions plays on both sides, right? So there are people who are making the decision not to vaccinate based out of fear of their potential side effects of vaccinations, which may or may not be shown to be true. And then trying to get people to vaccinate through a fear campaign such as, well, then your child will get this horrible disease and these are then the potential consequences of that also may not work because then they have to choose between fears, right? And so which is more scary?
Right.
A disease you've never heard of or a side effect that you've seen in other people.
Or it's rare, like, or at least heard of, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think people are way more scared about like getting that sort of very, 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 very rare side effect from a vaccination than they are from getting a very less rare case of MMR or something else. It's very disheartening that people will often go with emotion over logic when it comes to vaccination and the safety of a child.
Yeah, definitely.
So Adrian, how about you? What have you been reading on XX this week?
The first post of this week was also by our health editor, Tara Haley, called Don't Take the Cinnamon Challenge. And I loved that she discusses the cinnamon challenge, which you may or may not have heard of, where you try to swallow a teaspoon of cinnamon without drinking a glass of water. She starts out with three anecdotes by people she knows who did actually attempt this challenge and moves into a recent research study that came out in Pediatrics last week about the possible consequences of taking this challenge that people may not be aware of. Cinnamon is actually a cellulose fiber. Cinnamon itself, when swallowed even in teaspoon and greater amounts, is not harmful. The fact is in the challenge, you usually inhale it. And this particular cellulose fiber is not degradable in your lungs, so it just sits there and is caustic. And so you may actually be causing yourself lung damage by taking this challenge because it's almost impossible to just swallow it and you almost always end up inhaling it. And there are people who have had some particularly bad consequences such as dying when taking this. So I actually saw things about not taking the cinnamon challenge all over the internet, not just Tara's particular post, but definitely that was of interest to me. Our editor-in-chief did a post on autism in the DSM-5. In case our listeners are not familiar, the DSM-5 is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, and it's the fifth edition. They do revamp this particular medical edition. It's supposedly the Bible of the psychiatric establishment, but many psychiatrists actually use it as a doorstop, and she's discussed a particular relation that the DSM has with autism and how autism is being redefined in the DSM and how that might affect those who are diagnosed with autism. So that's a read from Emily and her particular specialty in autism. But perhaps my favorite post of the week was this one on Walnut's Willful Murder and World Book Night by DXS contributor Ray Burks, because it combines books and chemistry. So there you go. You have me there. And she was discussing a murder mystery called A Rule Against Murder, in which chemistry plays an important role. And actually, if you look at a lot of murder mysteries, chemistry is often used as the smoking gun. And so this is discussing a poisoning in using a chemical that you can extract from the black walnut tree called juglone or juglone, which is a chemical found in nearly every part of the tree. She discusses the structures and shows the structures of the chemical and how it has a light change in its structure and how that is affects the body. And it's a really fun, interesting read. It's, even though it discusses murder, it's kind of our lighthearted read of the of the week, I'd say.
Well, it is about a murder mystery. It's a fictional kind of whodunit, so it is lighthearted, yep. I guess. In the only way murder can be lighthearted.
Yep. And of course, we had our I Am Mental Illness post this week. It was called The Things We Never Leave Behind, and it was written by graduate student Jessica Smith. And she says, taking that first step towards mental wellness changed my life. And she's a, as I said, a graduate student who went from being a type A personality, having it all together, to going to graduate school, becoming overwhelmed, having increased anxiety, crying all the time, and having no idea why this was happening. And an email sent by her graduate school that went out to all of the students at the end of the term saying, it's a stressful time. If you're having difficulties dealing with the stress, please go use our mental wellness facilities and talk to a counselor and seek the help that you might need. She decided to do it because this was taking a toll, both her professional life as a graduate student and her personal life. She talked to a counselor for a while, and she eventually chose to take some medication, and it has helped immensely with her personal life and her graduate career. And I think this is a post that, first of all, every graduate student should read. I also went to counseling when I was a graduate student. It's a very stressful time, and I found it interesting that many graduate students I went to school with took advantage of our mental wellness center on campus.
But
no one ever talked about it. It was only if you happened to see them as you were crossing paths for your appointments that suddenly you're in this closed loop and no one ever discussed. But I knew a lot in just my department who were doing that. So
I didn't know anybody, but I definitely did. And I'm sure other people did, because to get a time in that little slot, we had two people on staff to help. I went to school in a hospital setting. So we did have doctors and MDs working. Everything was just sort of right there. Mm-hmm. And it would sometimes take a little bit to get a regular appointment because of how many people they were trying to fit in. Because it is. You just sometimes need that other person to be there for you that doesn't have any ties. It's not your friend. It's not your spouse or significant other. It's a very nice thing to have.
Mm-hmm. And while this focuses, and what I just said focuses on graduate students and graduate school, I think everybody could benefit from reading this, because there are some parts of it that you might relate to or might help you understand other people who are dealing with this level of anxiety and helping the idea of seeking help. There is a trigger warning because suicide is mentioned in this post.
Okay.
You can find all those posts at our website, xxscience.org, by clicking on the links to the post title on the main page. In addition to our XX Science site postings, our sister site, XX Science Jr., had two posts this week, both from Future Science Leaders bloggers. We learned about Yura Darko, Langendar Francis, and a handful of famous scientists. If you're interested in a new species of flying reptile that was discovered in Romania, you'll want to check out that first post on Monday, April 22nd. Unfortunately, that new species is extinct. We found its fossils, and it happens to be a new species, so that's pretty interesting. And if you're interested in learning a little bit more about scientists, the post on the favorite scientists by this particular blogger gives about a paragraph on 6 different scientists, and you might learn something new. So please take a look at those. You can find those posts at xxsciencejr.blogspot.com or by following the link from the xxscience.org main page. Now on to our news. This week I have 2 articles I want to share with you. The first is at IVN.us called Obama Administration Commits $3.1 Billion to STEM Education. And this posted April 22nd. I personally am not totally convinced that we need to encourage a whole bunch more majors in STEM. One of the things that is transpiring is that it seems like there have been many layoffs in science, technology, engineering, industry. So you already have somewhat of a glut of professionals in these capacities and not enough jobs. So we certainly aren't lacking for people to fill these jobs. Having more bachelor's, master's, and doctoral students and people with these degrees in science may not actually be the best idea, in my opinion. However, this particular money is to improve STEM education nationwide, and I'm definitely for that. What is needed is for people to have a better education so that they can have a better grasp of what science is. And if we can improve science education to be more interesting for people, to get the concepts down, and perhaps have their own love of science, not so that they necessarily try to make a career out of it, because that may or may not be feasible, but so that we have citizen scientists. We certainly need citizen scientists. And if you follow me on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook, at Fionn Rose on Twitter and Adrian Rorick on Google+ and Facebook, I do routinely post citizen science projects that you can participate in, even if you aren't a professional scientist, but just love doing science. But this article talks about the actual funding and where it is going and what the intention with that funding is. And of course, the focus is on jobs, but as I said, I don't particularly buy that angle. Now, the other news I wanted to talk about is not really news. It just happens to be a post about Mathy Ladies to Follow on Twitter that was posted on April 24th at the Roots of Unity blog on the Scientific American Network. And this post has several dozen women who post about math or identify with math, and even if they don't 100% post on math, they do discuss math quite a bit. This is always fun to get to see new people who are talking about math. So if you are interested in science and you're interested in math and you want to follow some interesting Twitter feeds of mathematicians and people who teach math, then please check out this post.
That wraps up our week at XX Science.
And you can expect some really exciting stuff coming up on both XX Science and XX Science Junior. You can look forward to articles on XX Science that include topics like the flu vaccine, disability, autism, and mental illness.
For the next month or so, we plan to post at XX Science Junior 3 times a week, and we'd love to have articles written with ages 8 to 16 in mind, so please contact xxsciencejr@gmail.com if you're interested or know someone in that age range who wants to write a science post.
XX Science accepts posts from contributors, and we do pay for posts that are accepted, so if you have a post that you'd like to have at the XX Science outlet, please email xxscience@gmail.com and visit the website where our requirements are outlined. We also do accept posts in the I Am Mental Illness series. We do not pay for those due to the nature of those posts, but please visit again our submissions page to learn more.
Thanks, Jeannie, for joining me today.
Thanks, Adrian. It's been a pleasure.
It always is. And thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast via iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. If you are enjoying the podcast, please leave a review or a 5-star rating at iTunes to help bring science to more people. Our music is provided by Editor-in-Chief Emily Willingham. Our artwork is by Dallas Lopez. Please like us on Facebook at /XXScience and follow us on Twitter at XXSci. This has been chemistry editor Adrian Rorick and biology editor Jeannie Garbarino at XXSci, bringing science to the woman in you.